So before we leave this poem, is there anything anybody would like to add? Yes.
I wanted to thank you for bringing up our purpose. I was just starting late in this session, and it took me a while to really understand, I think, where you were taking us. But and I wanted to sort of offer a different metaphor that I think that works for me. I think it's getting to the same point, which is that the mystery is, like an infinite ocean, and we're clinging to some rocks in it, and we're afraid to drown. but the rocks are permeated with mystery anyway. They're a figment, and our practice is to just, just let go and let the mystery that brought forth the rocks and us nurture us. I think it fits with the breath too, because the mystery is insubstantial and intangible, and the breath is kind of our access, both metaphorically and biologically, our access to the intangible, or at least the less substantial, because we take it inside us, and despite its insubstantiality, it supports us. We can feel it as we practice. We can feel the breath supporting us, and it helps build our faith, we understand that letting go is like breathing, or vice versa.
Thank you.
So that's my take on the poem.
I was just hoping you could expound a little bit further on the backward step, which you mentioned. I know it's not mentioned directly in the poem, so I don't know if that's a good question for right now at this moment, but I was just hoping to hear more about that.
Maybe after Tassajara.
I wanted to say something and then I didn't get around to it. I just wanted to try today. That is, I really like your teaching style because, as far as I can see, you don't have a teaching style. So, in other words, your teaching style is really clean. What you see is what you get. And I really appreciate that. We have the opportunity to see quite a number of different teachers here with different styles. And the less style a teacher has, the better I like them.
So I'm not styling, huh? Well, there was a post of some sort on some Buddhist information flow. I don't remember where I saw it, but young man trained in Japan, and he actually explained the four types of talks typically given in Japan. So he had the Japanese names for, which I don't remember the other ones, but one of them was taking a text and going line by line and studiously relating and talking about the history, and then other one, two other types were kind of expounding some piece of the sutra or something for an event like a funeral or a gathering of people, mostly lay people, and it was usually kind of a feel-good sense. There's more to it in the way he wrote it. It was more detailed and interesting. But the fourth one was Taisho, which is just speaking directly from the heart, from like right out of your sitting or something like that, about usually about Zazen. And he said in the United States, it's the opposite. Most people expect that kind of talk. And the other ones don't really appear so much. And it was the way Coben talked. I mean, he didn't show up with a text to, well, every once in a while, I guess, but for the most part, he just like spoke. And actually, in the latter years at Hokoji, he hardly spoke at all. I mean, he'd just say, oh, "How's your family? You know, how's your husband?" You know, like that around the room. And I don't know if he was just kind of burned out or if we didn't ask good questions. And so there was like, he already told us and we didn't get it. So I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Well, I hope it's of some benefit. I don't know really any other way to do it. I try and do a little preparation so that it's not completely off the cuff. But
how is it that you chose this? I mean, there's so much, even just in this book,
There's
many verses, instructions.
How did I choose that one?
Yeah.
I don't know, actually. I was going to... They're all of his speak to the same thing. It's, you could pick any of them, really, and we'd be talking about the same subject. It's kind of interesting. I think actually to answer that is that it's that second sentence about apparent habits. You know, that one really strikes a chord with me for a variety of reasons, because we have these tendencies, habits that obscure our relationship to the ultimate truth. And yet, they're illusory. So, and as he calls them, apparent habits. So on the one hand, you know, you have to like grind them down, and on the other hand, you can brush them away. You know, and in another way, they're just apparent. They're not really there. They're not really an obstacle. We just let them be. And that's one of the things, I think, sitting this way and having this opportunity to sit continuously for these several days is that we can allow all of that to settle down, for one thing. That's silence. And then it's illuminated by our awareness, our innate nature's awareness that he so lovely describes in pretty much every poem, bright light. And I was talking with Francois about like meditation technique of to not label things while you sit. So often we're taught, count your breath, and then we have to let go of the counting. And in the same way, the observing thoughts, Vipassana tend, you know, is taught to label it thought, you know. And so to just observe awareness but not calling it anything. When you hear the sound of the creek, you don't call it that, or the bird, you don't call it a bird. It's just is. It's a some wave, some ripple of mind, but you don't... Well, the long and short of all that is that you're, this sense of self also is a construct that we need to function. But we usually have more of it constructed than we need. And so in this environment, there's an opportunity to deconstruct the self, if you will, but it has, I find there's a sense of permeability about whatever I am, this thing that moves around and is conscious and interacts, but it's permeable, and there's no, like, this is our body, this whole thing. And one of my, shall we say, pet topics or is about moving from here into the world, this other busier aspect of our life, and how to not make a break between sitting like this and 2 weeks from now when we're, some of you may will still be here, but you know, I'll be back building a house and, you know, dealing with people and all that, all the same stuff comes into play. It's, you know, I think it was in part the way Hokoji was structured, in that it was, you know, the wall, there were walls to the temple, so to speak, but they were like energetic, glistening walls that people could just come through and go back out of. And, but as I moved, like, further and further out, they, I don't know, everybody you meet, it's part of the Sangha. And how are you gonna address them and treat them? All, you know, we can't let it stop here in this Sesshin environment. It has to go and permeate the entire construct. Well, there's I'm fond of pointing out that all the rules are directly from our true nature, from enlightened mind. That is information that's passed from that direction, not from this direction going up. But at the same time, because that information, it can be used as signposts along the way. things like the precepts and the paramitas. And they can also be like filters. And if we can activate them in our life. So we, in whatever, particularly I think a difficult situation, I read something by Trungpa Rinpoche that was quite fascinating. He was talking about bardo, and not just between life and death, but between events. And somebody asked him, so if you find yourself in a hell realm, what do you do? He said, I try hard to stay there. And what I got out of that was that in the midst of some, particularly in the midst of some conflict, because that's that difficult time, to not squirm and to actually let there be space in it, in an awareness, and if there's time, you can use these concepts of enlightened mind, these aspects of enlightened mind, like generosity and giving and patience and zeal and so on.
In difficult times, that's a little bit the imagery that he used, instead of clinging,
mm-hmm.
which is avoiding the, mm-hmm. the problem, the situation.
We tend to defend our position, so in this case, you're letting go of your position immediately, and then there's the opportunity for something to change. But as long as we're hanging on to it, we're continuing to create this ongoing illusion. I think in part the metaphor of the moon is that it's always shining, whether you point at it or whether you see it.
Like the second of the last line says, wander into the circle of wonder. And sitting and hearing things, of course you can label them or identify them, but you can be surprised by them, like the frogs. And it's freezing at night, and the frogs are out. And so the wonder just goes. And there's one other part in here that maybe Cliff would have a comment on too. I wonder if it speaks of neutrinos. The deep source, transparent down to the bottom, can radiantly shine and respond unencumbered to each speck of dust without becoming its partner. What do you think of that?
I wonder what happened to the shadows. I don't know.
It's that penetrating insight. And each phenomenon that appears, we see it. We hear the frogs in the freezing night, but we aren't encumbered by them. We don't attach to them. They just are. Coben used to talk about like an entire lifetime of retreat, even in the midst of all of this. And this is also, he refers, Tongji refers to that, gosh, I can't quite see, the upright interdependence, upright independence does not rely on anything. Kogan lived lived like that. He died like that too, actually. Somewhat emotionally torn, maybe. You have to each discover the root, your own root. There's almost too much information, you know. I think it's there to to encourage and instill you with faith, these words and all the other words, that there's something beyond what's imaginable and what beyond what's tangible, as somebody was saying, that it's, but it's there, and it's you can touch it, and that's where suffering ends, because you know what you read is, it's true. Your faith is confirmed. And like the story of Buddha, after his enlightenment, wandered around for a week and was encouraged to stay. That's what we do as well. We don't get to check out. We stay to serve. But I think it's important for these two guys going off to Tassajara not to get lost in the broad spectrum of fundamentals, and to remember the well, it's a different style, but it's I'm partial to this under the tree out in the woods by the fire style of what Kogan showed us.
We'll be sure to find a tree out in the back somewhere and take up a few days of Kogan style practice while
And I think that is such the irony of it. I mean, Kogan was brought over, in a sense, or came over to help set up Tassajara, and to get the Zen Center and take care of, you know, Deva Roshi and all those people after Suzuki Roshi's death. And then his own temples, he just kind of like, he let us be, and each one was set up differently. I was sharing with Ian, and I know I've shared with many of you, but when I went to Europe, to Velsentor and Prague, in Austria, Velsentor, Switzerland, I was serving, I was server, I was an assistant server, and I was serving just the way Angie taught me, that Kogan taught her. And after my first time of serving, I was chastised. I was chewed out because I was not doing it Kogan's way. And I thought it was just hysterical. Uh-huh. And it was then I really got it. There's these huge, at in Austria, they have these huge drums and bells. And they go, okay, our morning service is, you know, going to happen. And they start beating on. I'm like, I'm sitting here, I'm like, whoa, you know. I mean, I remember, I think Angie brought the big bell here from Japan and the little bell. You know, I think it's the same one we have. It's been here for 20 years or something. And they said, we're doing it the way Caitlin taught us. And I'm just like going, oh, my gosh, this is the biggest joke or experiment. This guy has really got something going on us. But in all, what he left us was Zazen.
Yeah.
Orioki Zazen Bhava Sutra.
Well, it's Zazen and the simple structure to support it.
Yeah. I just thought. And even going to Hokkoji, I remember Art, the first time I did Doan, you know. Art, of course, you knew Art was going to let you know what he thought anyway, but I was doing it like Todd's way at the time, a little too long between the striking of the bowl. And Art just chewed me up once. I don't know if I'm coming or going. Are you going to hit the damn thing or what?
Funny this about Art, because kind of give you an idea of about this practice in a way that I met Art when I first moved, Art and Jenny when I first moved to Taos. They were living with Coven, and the next year moved into town and take care of their kids and run a business, and so he wasn't really around that much for maybe 15 years. They were in town. We saw them a lot, but they weren't up at the Zendo sitting. And they retired and ended up as caretakers for the Zendo. And he really got into sitting. And one day I saw him in town at the coffee shop, just happened to bump into him, and he's like, "Hey! You got to try sitting sometime, you know?" It's all lit up. It's like, easy, Art. It's like a born-again Buddhist.
For the worst.
And he also was someone who... He poo-pooed the whole form that we do. All the rituals and things. Which was minimal in and of itself. But... he started doing the Doan position, and he would not let go of that. In fact, when he died, I came up to the house, and family was there, and a few Sangha members, and they were all, what do we do? And I thought, let's chant the Heart Sutra really loud, because that's that would be his best send-off, because he loved it so much.
Greg pointed out something with me a couple days ago. He said Suzuki Roshi and Koban came here, started these temples, and left it. Instead of passing it on to family, or, you know, they just... I appreciate that, Greg. But just there was letting go of the rock, like Steve was talking about. Just must be total faith. Or did you sense him wanting to? Well, we need to do this to keep it going.
There was some of that. I mean, here we all are, taking care of it. One time, I'd been in Taos about 5 years. Took Art and Jenny left. I moved in at his insistence into that house and with my Barbara. And and he came up to me one day and said, "I'm going to be traveling the next 5 years. You stay put." Okay. Still there. I don't know. It's up to you what your relationship is to it. I can't walk away anymore. I'm stuck. Maybe someday. Make Ariste. He's in a really lull transition right now. I realized the other day that it's just kind of petering down from the original group. There's only a few left, so new people are starting to come, but that's where my attention is now, is nurturing that new people coming. Oh, opening it up. I've been doing that for a few years. I kind of unwound it because actually at Sesshin I haven't been holding strict silence, for example, because even though I appreciate it, I realized people would come and completely new to it, and you know, let's say we're sitting for 5 days and they can only come for the middle two, and they show up and it'll be like zombie land, you know. Not, they won't even look at you, you know, somebody's like, and we we have a position, of course, somebody to greet them now, you know, so that some people can maintain silence and they'll be a greeter. But for a while, well, and so actually in February we sat together and this woman came up from Albuquerque as part of a group down there that joins us from time to time. And she pointed out, you know, because we have a tea like this, kind of general, easy, everybody can talk, and at night a more formal talk, I guess you'd say. So she pointed out that without that kind of releasing, we wouldn't have all bonded the way we did, which was true. We really got a good, solid feeling, much like this group, you know. And in part, it's through our interactions, verbally as well as, you know, work period and so on. I think very experienced people can join together and be virtually silent because there's just not that much to say. And yet for people who are just starting, they need to talk, they need to express their questions and get clarification, and we all do. I mean, regardless of where you are in your process or progress. And the other thing, it's for our enjoyment on some level to share what's going on. And Koban called that tea time, he started it as a group dokusan. He said he couldn't do dokusan anymore. He's completely fried on meeting one-on-one. And so he started that group thing, which I like this style. It's somewhere in between. You know, I have the privilege of being able to speak more of totally the whole time if I want, you know, out of your respect. But I like opening it up to hear what everybody has to say. It's kind of the way we do it at Okoji, actually. Well, one thing that comes out in relaxing the silence or the rule of silence to some degree. It's not encouraged to talk, but there's opportunities to do it. In between, we're not, you know, during Kinhin, we're silent. But there are opportunities to speak and question and whatnot. But what's interesting is it reveals somewhat what silence is. And I've come to see it as stillness, in that when your mind is still and you're present, silence ensues. But if something pops up, you can respond to it without being trapped by it. And you can respond from stillness. And you don't get agitated, huh?
Or not.
Or not. Hit him with a stick. Okay. Well, I was a little, as I said yesterday, meeting with everybody one-on-one, and it takes a lot of energy, and I get a lot of energy from it. But I wasn't as fully prepared to give a talk today as I would have liked to have been. But I wanted to emphasize that there is a practical realm to this. It's a link. I mean, there is this, what we were talking about the last few days, that was much more about true nature and being in that space, I think. But there's along the way, there's like this practical way of being with people that absolutely comes out of that experience of the absolute, and you manifest it continuously in what we call our daily life. And there's lots of opportunities to practice in that way. And then I would encourage you not to see it as separate from this practice. This way of being here this week is obviously different than some other job that you have, but lying down, standing up, whatever it is, you still can manifest.